If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I don't know what it's like in the States, but over here, certainly, obviously, we have sort of the system schooling, but more and more you hear that actually physical education is not part of the curriculum. And so for me, that's a really worrying sign because in, you know, with me, mental health, it's not something you have or you don't. We all have mental health to look after, and it should be treated the same way as physical health. And I think that the two go hand in hand. And for me, it's very much about sort of maintaining a level of, you know, physical activity daily does sort of put your mind into a good place.
How you day? That was the voice of Simon Dent. Simon is an incredible businessman. Not only did we connect on our mutual love for football or soccer and just the idea of navigating through changes and never being stagnant, I really enjoyed the start of our conversation, probably the most because we tackled mental health. We talked about the importance of having education in a non-traditional sense, how we move beyond what is structured and really dive deeper into the inner layers of who we are and taking time for self-care. You're going to hear in the podcast Simon's, you know, transitions through his career as, you know, as a lawyer, as a sports agent, and ultimately as the founder of Dark Horse. And I think it's really, really important for people to realize just the commitment he had to self-work and how that translated to his business work. You know, we're getting ready to approach the halfway point of the year. It's easy to get frustrated. Some of you may already have had, failures this year. Some of you may have had some successes, and maybe you're not sure how to handle both success and failure. So I think this episode will help you stay balanced, stay centered, and remember who you are, what your purpose is, and how to move forward. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Simon Dent. Now, after starting his professional life as a lawyer, Simon quickly realized that he had more to offer the world and made the transition to that of a sports agent. Over the following decade, he represented premiership footballers, Olympic gold medalists, rugby World Cup winners, and even a Hollywood movie star. In 2013, Simon switched to marketing to help launch the agency BBH Sport and work in slightly more traditional brands. Then in the spring of 2016, he co-founded Dark Horses alongside the founders of advertising agencies, Lucky Generals. Welcome to the show. I'm excited to talk all things creative with you.
Thank you very much. That's a very, very kind introduction.
Well, the pleasure is mine. And your background fascinates me. We were talking about that before I hit record. The leaps and bounds and the transitions. You know, you said sports was at the heart of each of your transitions. But so go from lawyer to sport agent to creative agency. Can you tell me what your motivations were as you were starting each of those careers? So we'll start off with the lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, the legal profession was a sort of an interesting one for me. And if I'm honest, quite a bruising one. I think I, when sort of at school, equivalent of your high school and sort of university, it was always something that, you know, quite rightly people encourage you to get into. And it was always thought of as a very respectable profession. And it was something that, to be honest, I never really did too much, investigations to actually, you know, the life of a lawyer. I was probably dazzled by the bright lights, the big bucks. And there was something I sort of plowed into. And it was obviously the entrance point is quite hard. So there was a lot of studying, a lot of exams. And yeah, to be honest, I was a sort of, it was something that when I actually got into the profession, it was something that I very quickly realized that I was attracted by the wrong things. And, you know, what a life lesson that was. But obviously, when you are sort of in your early 20s and you move to the sort of to a big city, you try to make it work. And that's where, obviously, you know, if you're continually doing something you don't enjoy and you keep sort of banging on the door, hoping that something changes, it doesn't, that's when you enter quite a dangerous space. And you know, I'm more than happy to talk about how I got into that place. And obviously, I ended up basically becoming quite ill.
No, I do. I mean, if it's not too much to share, I would love to hear that, because I know a lot of the listeners always want to hear about, you know, yeah, the reality of what that can be like when you come across those difficulties.
Yeah, and I think it was something that, you know, looking back now, it was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me. But at the time, just all those pressures and the whole sort of, you know, skill sets that there's just no education for. You have to learn through experiencing them, really. They're not something you can really learn from a book at school or university. And I think, it was, you know, whilst in the profession, it was just something that I did keep trying to make it work. I knew that I had the ability, but for some reason, it just wasn't sticking. And the bottom line is, was that I just didn't enjoy it. And I think I didn't enjoy the subject. I didn't feel passionate about it. And, you know, it took me 4 or 5 years of working in industry to eventually realize one day when I'd sort of I went to the doctor, said I didn't feel right, and they said, oh no, that's a lack of iron. So I was put on iron supplements a couple of weeks later, still didn't feel right, and I basically entered this place where very quickly I was diagnosed with severe depression, anxiety, and I was signed off work, and that started a whole fascinating sort of process of basically understanding how the mind works and the damage I'd done to myself over the previous 5 years.
Yeah. And that is fascinating indeed, as you did point out, because the idea of mental health is only something that's only started to really become something that people talk about often, but it's something that has plagued many careers for a while because, I don't know, because of the stigma and because of just maybe a lack of understanding of what truly encompasses, you know, mental health, you know, and how it plays a big role into, you know, pressures and how we see ourselves.
100%. And I think it's, you know, it's right. It is now being addressed, and there's some really good organizations that are now sort of making it or trying to make it part of the conversation. And look, it wasn't something, you know, it was back then, as I said, I tried to seek out the help. I couldn't find it. And it's, you know, there is absolutely, you know, I'm not one to point blame at anyone. And it was just something that I believe that was part of my process of really understanding myself. And as I said, I look back on it now, and, you know, it's quite strange to say it, but I look back on it in fondness, because it was such a period of time that I had to go through my life that, to be honest, it's made me the person, not so much that I am, but it's put me on a journey now where actually it taught me so much about how the mind works, how to treat other people, how to look after yourself, and ultimately what, you know, my priorities are as a human being.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I love that you were being honest with that. Thank you for sharing, because, I mean, me being an entrepreneur and a speaker and a writer, some of the things that people don't normally talk about, and I imagine it's the same with a high pressure situation as a lawyer, is,
yeah,
you know, there are lots of things that come with the job. When sometimes you deal with things, whether it's deadlines, whether it's the, you know, client demands and things like that. And, you know, you sometimes convince yourself that you have to be a certain way, or you be perceived as weak, or you can't show emotions and all those kind of things. And all those things do take a toll, and they're not physically initially, they're just there mentally, and then they start to manifest physically, and then you wonder where they came from.
And you think that, you know, these are things that are going as the body grows and the mind grows, and these pressures that, as I said earlier, you know, you're not equipped.
Yeah.
With these things, but these are not life skills you're taught. And, you know, to this day, I still, you know, the sort of the traditional education system is something I look at a lot now. And, you know, obviously I'm not involved in that sector, but, you know, I often think about, you know, the skills taught at school, you know, whether it's, you know, for me, things like, you know, the art of listening. How do you actually listen? How important is listening? It's just not something we're ever taught to do. And then things like finance, like we're not taught the basics of finance, and these little things that, you know, empathy, things like real core life skills that actually
real core life skills, yeah,
part of the curriculum. Yeah. The world, I believe, would be a nicer place.
No, I love that. So you're saying listening, finance, and empathy. Are there any other things you do right now that you practice on a daily basis that help you maintain a level of balance?
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, one of the biggest things I've really lent into in the last 5 years is you know, physical activity and exercise. And it's something that I don't know what it's like in the States, but over here, certainly, obviously, we have the sort of the system of schooling, but more and more you hear that actually physical education is not part of the curriculum. And so for me, that's a really worrying sign, because in, you know, with me, mental health, it's not something you have or you don't. We all have mental health to look after, and it should be treated the same way as physical health. And I think that the two go hand in hand. And for me, it's very much about sort of maintaining a level of, you know, physical activity daily, does sort of put your mind into a good place.
Yeah, that's brilliant. No, I love that. And I love that we started this interview this way, because that sets up a lot of what you do. So, okay, at that point, you realized that law wasn't working. You started to see things within your body, and your doctor started to say some things to you, and then you realized, okay, there needs to be a change.
Yeah.
Your change was to transition into a sports agent. Now, anyone who knows me knows sports is my first love. I'm a Nigerian.
Yeah.
Manchester United is my favorite team of all time. I love basketball, soccer, and tennis. Those are like my three favorites. But I also wanted to make a career in sports. And when I quickly realized it wasn't going to be an athlete, I started looking for different ways. And sports agent was a career that I thought of. So what was it like to transition from being a lawyer to a sports agent?
It was interesting. I think the piece of the jigsaw that's missing there, which I should sort of, you know, explain to yourself and your listeners, is there was a period of time where I spent a lot of my life in nightclubs, and that basically I was involved in organizing a lot of parties at a lot of the nightclubs in London and the high-end nightclubs. And I basically found myself in a world where, coming out of the legal profession, I was meeting a lot of high profile professional sportsmen in London, men and women. And it's sort of the sports agent evolution, just, it happened over a sort of couple of years, really, where suddenly I found myself with a peer group around me of well-known sportsmen and women. And at the same time, I obviously had my legal qualifications, so I knew my way around, you know, contractual negotiations. And suddenly, as the trust built with these guys, it was sort of actually, you know, Simon, can you help me with this contract and this? And before I knew it, I was actually performing the services of an agent. So it wasn't a case of me going and joining one of the big agencies to learn the trade. I was effectively self-taught. And as I said, it was something that I really found my feet. It was something that, you know, I regard myself as a people person. And that is one of the core skills of being a talent manager, is that you have to have a way with people. It's something that it's for the hard worker. Like, you are on call 24/7. It's not a case of, you know, there are no such thing as working hours, you know, when you're working as a sports agent. And even more so, obviously, with most sports taking place at weekends, as the civilians out there are sort of slowing down the week on a Friday, you're ramping up because it's game time on Saturday and Sunday. So right. It was, you know, it was something that I just found myself with these contacts, with my legal sort of skill set, and suddenly I started to build a business.
That's interesting. And for those listening, I think it'd be interesting to point out just what happened with Simon's career. Is sometimes you can fall into something based on the skill sets you have, and sometimes, a lot of times, people, when they initially start a career that they don't like, you know, after spending a lot of time to study for it, like law or maybe even medicine, you know, they start to, you know, get down on themselves, like, wow, I wasted that much of my life on this career. But it turns out that those skills as a lawyer were transferable to your current environment at the time. And so that's something to pay attention to sometimes if you're, you know, really in a position.
I do not look back on any of these experiences as a waste. They all taught me something. I think a lot of the time in life, you can't force the process. I do believe patience is a really important thing. And again, these days, you know, we live in this generation of social sharing, whether it's across Instagram or whatever, where I think people want what they haven't got and they want it now. I think I was, you know, my generation was quite lucky we weren't exposed to that. And I think that what I As I was developing, I was quite fortunate that there was all these things I'd done in the past that actually worked quite well for me, and they really helped me become the person I am now.
Right. Yeah. No, I certainly can believe that. Now, before we talk about the creative thinking and creative agency, I'm very curious as to what you learned from being surrounded by football. And for those listening, yes, I'm using football the right way here, or soccer players.
About soccer.
Soccer players. It's funny because when you're from Nigeria, you first say football as football, and then I started traveling and it became soccer. But yes, soccer players, footballers. What did you learn about yourself and people in general when you were started to be surrounded by gold medalists, World Cup winners, and things like that? And it says here that you also represented a Hollywood movie star. Is there something there that you noticed, among the best of the best, or are there things that you feel like are gaps missing?
It's such a great question. And if I'm honest with you, I wish I'd appreciated it more at the time. Where I'm at now, I've got into a place where I'm a lot more into, personal development and learning from the best. You know, I try to read, three or four books a month at the moment. I listen to podcasts, I listen to your podcast. I'm like a sponge now. I think back then I was probably, I wasn't aware of the environment I was in and how much I could learn. I think also it's probably because it was my job. Mm-hmm. And therefore what I was doing with these guys, it became quite transactional. So for example, it became my life, and my life was quite normalized by things that a lot of people would find crazy, really impressive. And I wish if I'm honest, I'd learned more. I think that what I did learn from them is that, high performance and at the level that these guys are operating, it is ultra competitive. So, to be a, for example, Premiership soccer player, the amount of self-assessment and dedication that takes from probably the age of, from the age of probably 6 or 7, they have been on a path where, many of their peers have fallen away. And it's the same in any sport. The guys in the NBA or NFL, it's like they have been through such a brutal upbringing. That was something that you really noticed. And for me, what really stood out even more was actually the process of careers coming to an end. And I think, I feel very blessed now that, I'm sort of looking in a world now where careers, can last till you're 70 years old. As an elite athlete, you probably have a 5-year window where you can maximize your potential. And for those guys, that is, understandably terrifying, because if you have devoted your life to learning a sport and becoming best at sport, you've had no time to learn any other life skills. And then suddenly, when your club no longer wants you, you don't have anything else. Now, of course, there's the superstars that can become the broadcasters and the face of the NBC and the various coverage. But that's 1%. The other 99% have got a lot to deal with. And that was something I found really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It is fascinating, isn't it? Because you do see documentaries and, behind the scenes of life post-athlete. And there are many people that really found identity in the sport. And so when the sport leaves them, it becomes a treacherous life, essentially. It doesn't matter what the money is or the fame is, there's a sense of loss. And then there are people that easily transition to other things. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed, at least from afar, as someone that studies human behavior, sometimes it really depends on the level of self-awareness you have and how you find your worth. Like if you define your worth on an external thing, maybe the sport or something, or other people's view of you, it becomes a very shaky ground when that goes away. But if it's something that you feel like, hey, this is, this is a phase in my life, this is something I can use, I want to use this for something bigger than myself, it then becomes a transferable skill that, that you can transition out. But it is interesting because different athletes react differently. You're right about that, for sure.
And I like that. And I think what's also really important at this point is to stress that in my experience, the good guys always end up okay. Mm. And I, what I mean by that is there's that old adage, isn't there? Remember people on the way up because you may need them on the way down.
Right. And
that's something that I just, you know, I there are so many great sporting talents who probably let ego take over.
Yeah. And,
you know, they were then the guys who, yes, they were, you know, MVP. They were the ones who everyone wanted to be friends with. But that circle of people that surrounded them was such a transient circle that suddenly, you know, when they weren't MVP and they weren't getting picked, they picked up an injury, those people disappear. And suddenly, if you haven't been a nice person to other people, you know, you suddenly find yourself in quite a lonely place. And that was, again, you know, we spoke about mental health earlier. It's kind of, you know, imagine walking out to a stadium every week with 60,000 people cheering your name, and then that's stopping. You know, we have a you know, there is a big problem here with sort of mental health and retired sports men and women, because it's such a big, it is such a big thing, and it's such a massive loss when you take away the fandom and left with nothing.
Absolutely. I love the flow of this interview. So we're starting and we're circling back to the importance of mental health. Yeah. Another thing that you start to realize, though, as we transition, I'm sure it uses a lot of your mental capability, is you noticed a lack of creative thinking, which led to what you do now with Dark Horses.
Yeah.
Can you explain how you transitioned from a sports agency to creative agency? Because when you say creative thinking, sports is not, I guess not, I'm saying that I can think of how creative thinking can factor into sports, but it seems like you saw something different from what I was initially thinking.
It was interesting because you know, a lot of my clients at the time were retired athletes who were often used by brands in marketing, advertising campaigns. And these guys would be, you know, appear in TV commercials or print or whatever it is. And I'd sort of watch them be used. And actually, I'd often think that the advertising agency using them weren't using them in the right way, just weren't getting the most out of them. And that, you know, that's where the sort of the lack of creativity sort of was, in my view, was really born. And obviously, these brands pay a lot of money for these athletes. And then when you see a terrible commercial and you know they've paid them £1 million or $1 million, and you're thinking, well, hold on, they're not getting their money's worth here. There needs to be better strategic thinking, linking the talent to the brand. So that's where it all started. And then there was that thinking. And as you rightly pointed out, I was provided with an opportunity to go into an advertising agency.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
5 years ago now, called BBH, you're a well-known global creative agency. I helped them set up BBH Sport. And it was really that I was there, when I was there, that it was my first exposure to the creative agency landscape. And it just impressed me so much. I'd never been surrounded by smarter people. And I was so enlightened, really, as to this whole new world. And that was really where I started thinking about, actually, that there's something I could do with this. There are very good things about BBH. There's a few things I changed. And that's where, really, after leaving there after 18 months, the idea was basically formed to launch my own creative agency.
Wow. Okay. So something I picked up on there was you said you'd never been surrounded by smarter people. And people always say, don't be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
So that energy jolt from that must have really, you know, I guess, stimulated you mentally.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. And do you know what? And even to this day now, I joke with the team, you know, there's sort of 50 or so people now at Dark Horses. And I joke that, you know, if I'm ever the smartest person in the room, we've got a problem. And I genuinely mean that, because I just love every day I come to the office and I learn, and I just feel that it, you know, it's such a privilege, and I'm so blessed to be in this environment. And it's one where, you know, it's kind of, you don't know what you don't know. It's going back to sort of the legal profession. It was one of those things where I just assumed for some reason that lawyer, the legal profession was full of really smart people and really bright people. Now, I was wrong. And there are obviously some incredibly bright people in that profession. But, you know, there are so many other worlds or parallel universes out there that, you know, I encourage everyone to try and explore, because you really just don't know what's out there. And the, as I said, when I sort of opened the door to the world of creative agencies 4.5 years ago, I just haven't looked back. And the biggest phase of growth in my life is basically, it's undoubtedly been in the period I've been in the world of creative.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's amazing. So, okay, so now that you run Dark Horses, you know, you co-founded it. Tell me more about Dark Horses and what the goal is. You know, who's your ideal client and what is the end goal for you?
It's interesting because we... dare I say, the goal keeps changing. So as I said, we launched this creative agency back in June 2016. The co-founders run and still run this very successful agency called Lucky Generals. I was aware that I couldn't just launch my own creative agency, so I approached three people who I knew were best in class at what they did. And I think that's a massive lesson as well for your listeners, that, you know, there's nothing wrong with admitting what you don't know. And I think that, you know, surrounding yourself with people that know more than you is just a smart thing to do. And again, that's probably not something I would have done in my 20s, because you kind of think you know best and you know everything. But that, again, just comes with time. And so we launched the agency. At first, it was a hard slog. You know, we had sort of 6 months without any clients. But then suddenly we started to get the proposition right. And the proposition was, as I said earlier, was really around injecting high-level strategic thinking and creativity into the world of sports marketing. So fast forward, you know, almost 3 years now, we are 50 people. We have some amazing clients. So, for example, brands such as Nissan, we look after their global sports sponsorship portfolio. So that's things such as Formula E, Champions League, City Football Group, and the Cricket World Cup. So we do all their advertising within that space, so bring those relationships to life. We're working currently with Puma and their activations around the Women's World Cup. A brand you probably will be familiar with in the US called Peloton. We launched them in the UK, and we're currently pitching for their German business. And so you'll see a sort of whole host of sort of brands activating sports brands. But yeah, it's a really nice collection of clients. And there's probably on the whole around 8 clients that we work with, which are a mixture of sports brands that activate through sports and sort of sports clubs and associations.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. So what would you say then is the best thing that an aspiring creative can work towards in order to get to a level of what you do? I mean, I can see an element of storytelling, I can see an element of understanding strategy, but what are skill sets or daily things that people can work to build?
It's really interesting, right, because I think that because we work in the world of sport, we're obviously incredibly lucky, because sport is such an emotional space. It's not only an emotional space, it's one where it's always on. So, you know, there is 24/7 somewhere in the world, there is a big sports event going on. So for your listeners, for us, it's just a space that people want to share their opinion. So I guess second to current affairs, sport is probably the second biggest thing shared on Twitter and Facebook, I guess. I mean, I'm making that up, but it's just always on. It's really emotional. And so therefore, when it's something that is that present in our lives, everyone's kind of involved in it. Everyone can have a point of view in it. I think from what we do is we try and, usually, as I said, with regards to brands that sponsor events, we try and give them a legitimate role within the sport. So, for example, you know what it's like. And America is probably a much more mature market, but if a brand is sponsoring your local football team, you don't just want to see the sort of LED logo flashing at you. You want them to have an authentic role, and you want them to tell some sort of story that aligns himself properly with your club, and that's really what we do. That's the big thing. And even like, you know, you talk about for your listeners, actual practical advice. Like, you know, I'm a big football soccer fan. My team's Tottenham.
I'm sorry for yesterday.
Yeah, well, I was there last night, so I've been to every game at our new stadium. I'll be in Amsterdam next week, and you know, I'm a passionate, you know, fan, and I think it's something that even every day I sort of, even though I work in the world of sports marketing, I still, you know, I turned up at the stadium last night, and I think, you know, you've got 60,000 incredibly passionate people there. It's Champions League semi-final, and you know, for me, we're as I said, we're incredibly fortunate. We work with Nissan. They're one of the sponsors. Now, Nissan do a lot around the Champions League. So it's one of those things where I'm very fortunate to be able to help them activate that partnership. And, you know, we're doing a lot with them on the road to Madrid and the final. And I always, whenever I go to sports events now, I do take note of the brands that actually, we always talk about the brands wanting and they should make the experience better for the fan. So for your listeners, that's always something I'd say is, whether watching on the television or at the stadium itself, you know, if there's a brand, you know, just have a look at which brands are leveraging those partnerships, because they're the ones that are actually doing the good job.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I love that. And it sounds like it goes back to the skill set you were saying, just understanding how to listen. These are things we aren't really taught, and not even just listening, active listening, right? Where you're listening with intention and not listening to respond with an idea in your head, or you're listening to find the gaps, essentially.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it works with that.
Huh. And that's just something, you know, again, it's something I'm glad I've learned now, but it's funny, I actually chatted to a colleague earlier. We were talking about, you must have come across David Goggins, I'm sure you have.
Yes, I have.
So David Goggins has just hit the UK, and we're like, we can't get enough of his content, we're loving it over here. And it was really interesting, he was talking about in his book, around he developed a mechanism for getting through, I think it was his Navy SEAL entrance exams, but he was never listening and learning it. He just devised a way of regurgitating it. And that really resonated with me, because to get to being a lawyer, I passed so many exams, but I don't think I actually learned anything. I just devised a way of actually getting through exams, which is, there's a big difference. And I think that's where, if you're really taught to listen and understand things, that's a lot different from being taught the skill set to pass exams, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. This is so fascinating to me. So then, okay, now with the next steps for Dark Horses, what would you like the listeners to know, and who ideally would you like to work with?
I mean, it's really interesting. And I think that I was actually chatting to another colleague about this earlier. It's sort of, you know, we've had an incredible run of luck with winning new business, and you know, it's going better than we could have ever imagined. And I think what we're incredibly proud of is our culture. And I think it's really worth sort of dialing in on the name Dark Horses. Now, this name was chosen because, do you have the expression in America, right? Dark horse, so it's like the underdog. Is that a familiar expression?
Yeah, that's familiar.
Exactly. So. And the name was chosen basically because we wanted to work with these underdog and challenger brands. And not only that, we also, you know, my place in the agency world was very much that of an underdog. Like people, you know, in the advertising and marketing world, it's quite a closed group. And it's, you know, we were aware that people wouldn't give us or me a chance. And what that really has informed us as an agency is the way we behave is with a lot of humility. So we have a line, and it's almost like a company manifesto that we reference a lot, which is, the moment you see yourself as a favorite, you've lost the race. And that is something that we hold really dear in everything we do. So, you know, if we win a new piece of business, or, you know, we smash a client meeting, you know, we're not spraying each other with champagne. There's enough humility to, we get back to work. And I think that is a way of informing the team at the agency has become really compelling and potent. And I think, you know, you asked the question about, you know, where is the agency going? I'm kind of, as a business, I'm not really worried. What I have, you know, sort of stumbled into is this amazing opportunity to basically help 50 people become better people. And I kind of, my role now, as a, you know, I don't really have a marketing qualification. I don't have any. I'm probably the least qualified marketeer in the business, ironically. But what I can do is I can actually have a say in the culture that we build and actually help provide a platform to improve the whole team. And that for me is really the key performance indicator now. It's kind of actually, if I focus on every team member and helping them grow as individuals, the profit and the business and the growth and the global expansion is probably going to take care of itself.
Yeah, that's well said, actually. Yeah, I love that, because it's what you've built is you've created something where you actually live out the values of what are your core values. And what happens is, it's essentially a result of that. And you've surrounded yourself with people you trust, people that inspire you and creatively and in all sorts of different ways, which is leading into the type of clients you get as well. So go ahead. Sorry.
And no, I was just going to say that the culture is so important. So I think that, again, it's really authentic. Like, people in the office, they're forming, friendships are going to have a life. And what I'm also very proud of is that most of our new business comes from recommendation. So, we're very lucky that we haven't been sort of dragged into the traditional advertising agency model of doing pitches and spending loads of money on whining and dining people. We've kind of had, I'd say 50% of our clients have come from other clients bringing them in the building and saying, you should meet these guys. And I think that for me is one of the things I'm most proud of with the whole business, because that is such a testament to not only the work we're doing, but actually the people we employ. Like, we've just got a group of nice people, really. And if for whatever reason, someone turns out not to be a nice person, then they'll be removed pretty quickly, because we kind of, we want to have that generous spirit in the workplace.
Yeah. No, this is good. This is good. I think it's good to hear this. A lot of times I've noticed people get jaded, right? Or just because they're used to hearing bad things from the news or cynical things from CEOs. And sometimes I think people forget that, as a leader, you can control or inspire a company culture. Yeah. And it does stem down from that. And so it's good to hear. It's good to hear that that's something that you really focus on.
I think it's perspective, right? And I think that, I'm a product of the environments I've been in. I've been incredibly lucky to learn from some of the best in the business with the founders of Lucky Generals who co-owned the business. I think that the people in the business now, I learn so much from them. So I think, when you have perspective, and again, looping back to sort of mental health, I think, when I was 25 years old and I was in a sort of private hospital and I wasn't very well, I can always look back to that moment in time and be like, do you know what? It's not that bad. And I think, that is something that I feel very blessed I've been in that situation, because, if a client leaves, so what? We'll go and get another one. I genuinely believe that. And I want our clients to have an amazing experience. They're obviously incredibly important, but nothing's more important than the health and the happiness of my team. And so, there's never going to be a situation here that I found myself in, because I'm just aware that I won't let that happen.
Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, this is awesome. This is awesome. Okay. So I'm going to close here with some interesting trivia questions for you, since you're a Tottenham fan.
Yes,
there's nothing I can say. I can't say anything this year.
No, you can't anymore. 10 years ago, you could have.
We are royally a mess. We had the Solskjaer high, and then everybody has come back to mean, regressed. Honestly,
yeah, okay, though, you'll work it out.
Well, you think so? I mean, you think so? The last success we had was with the greatest coach of all time, Sir Alex Ferguson.
You'll work it out. Don't worry. In our lifetime, you'll work it out.
In our lifetime. Look at you. Look at you. I can't remember Tottenham being able to talk this way. This is so – okay. You know what?
It's not being very humble, is it?
No, it's okay. I think you – I'm sure you've dealt with many cocky Man U fans in your life. So I think this is fine. But with some fun questions here. Who's your favorite athlete of all time?
Favorite athlete of all time. Hopefully you know this name, Glenn Hoddle, who was a Tottenham footballer in the 80s.
I only know of his I only know him by, I guess, highlights and things like that.
Yeah.
Wow. So 80. So that's he's your favorite. Why is he your favorite?
Well, just because he was my first. Yeah, I'm 42 now. So, you know, when I was sort of at the peak of fandom, age or 10 to 14, he was, you know, the Tottenham Hotspur in England number 10. And he just played football the right way. You know, he probably wouldn't survive in today's game because he wasn't really an athlete, but he was effortless. And yeah, he was a beautiful footballer to watch.
Gotcha. Favorite country to travel to?
Great question. Do you know what? I'd say at the moment, the United States.
Really?
Yeah. Nice. I've traveled a lot, been lucky to travel a lot, but I think, as I sort of mentioned earlier, I've got big aspirations to take dark horses to America. So it's a country that I'm spending quite a lot of time in, fortunately, at the moment.
All right, and last question here is before we go to the last couple is the brand that that inspires you the most. It could be, doesn't have to be sports, but I'm curious to see if you observe a brand to just see what they do and say to yourself, "Well, that's what I aspire to be."
Wow, that's a really good question. I'll be brutally honest. Before I started working with Puma, I'd say Nike, but I don't think I could say that now. No,
contractually, I don't know if you can say that.
I'll be pretty honest. You know, as I said, I'm not from the advertising world, but there was a very famous Nike campaign in the 90s for Nike Running, which the line was, "There is no finish line." And it was a great series of print ads they ran across America, which was just some really well-shot images of sort of long roads, the redwoods in the northwest, and sort of the fact that there is no finish line is just a line that, you know, in everything I've always done in life, it's resonated with me. And I think even more so now, where even what we're doing with dark horses, there really is no finish line. And that I think, even manifesting yourself personally, I've now got into ultra running, so I'm sort of now doing like 100k races, and it's weird. I think, yeah, that as a brand was always, you know, Nike always inspired me, but. Gotcha. Obviously now being having Puma as a client, they're not so bad either.
Okay, I love that. Where can people find you, Simon, and learn more about your work?
Well, look, obviously I'll direct people to the Dark Horses website, which is darkhorses.com, and on social, Dark Horses LBN, and that's on Twitter and Instagram. And then my I'm not really one for Instagram, but I'm on Twitter at Simon J. Dent.
Simon J. Dent. Okay. All right. This is awesome. I always ask my guests this question though before I let people go. And it's my mission statement reframed as a question. And my mission statement is, use your difference to make a difference. So how do you, Simon, use your difference to make a difference?
Well, I think the one thing I've always been very aware of is that I've never been able to, people have never been able to pigeonhole me. And I think I spent a lot of my my teens and early 20s trying to fit in with what everyone else wanted and what I thought society wanted. And for me, it was a real sort of light bulb moment, I guess, when I came through the sort of mental health problems that I had, that actually you just have to be yourself. And I think that myself is actually someone that is just, I'm a very different character. I enjoy lots of different things. And I think that is something that we should all embrace, you know, and there's that phrase, isn't there, you know, stay in your lane. Well, I actually believe don't stay in your lane. I think life gets really interesting when you sort of move around lanes.
Yeah, no, it's so, I love that point, because you're talking about not being limited by boxes or labels that society's put in us, and allowing yourself to really have that full expression of self, essentially.
Exactly. And then that's the thing. And don't be afraid to try things that are different. And obviously everyone has their own personal pressures and circumstances, but you know, we only get one life, so I just encourage people to experiment and try as many things as they can, you know, and that obviously manifests itself in how you know your profession, because ultimately that's probably the thing you'll spend most of your life doing.
Yeah, well, I love it. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. This has been a real pleasure. I really love the fact that we focused on like the skill sets that people normally talk about often, and mental health. So that was really fun.
I really enjoyed this. It's great. And I look forward to seeing you in Manhattan soon.
Yes, yes, yes. And I look forward to seeing you in Old Trafford bowing down to the right team.
Brilliant. All right, great talk.
Till, ladies and gentlemen, until next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.